So welcome to the instruction period. Let's begin by sitting quietly together. I'm going to read you something from Krishnamurti about meditation. It's a beautiful description of awareness. He says, to be aware is an extraordinary state of mind. To be aware of your surroundings, of the trees, the bird that is singing, the sunset behind you. To be aware of the faces, of the smiles. To be aware of the dirt on the road. To be aware of the beauty of the land. Of a palm tree against the red sunset. The ripple of the water. Just to be aware, choicelessly. And then he says, listen to the movement of your own thoughts. Do not control them. Do not shape them. Do not say, this is right, that is wrong. Just move with them. That is awareness in which there is no choice, no condemnation, no judgment, no comparison or interpretation, only mere observation. And this, of course, is what makes our mind rather sensitive and wakeful. So in this state of awareness, there is attention. So if you would, please, just sitting here together, perhaps following the path of the breath all the way in and all the way out, but really just sitting with attention. Resting into awareness itself, being fully aware. So today we come to the fourth foundation of mindfulness from the Anapanasati Sutta. And in this section, we are asked to be mindful of breathing, but also to contemplate the Dharma. Dharma means the truth of things. Dharma means or refers to the teachings of awakening. Dharma also has the meaning of that which supports or a foundation. Dharma is the way things are. So in this section, there are four specific reflections. The first is a reflection on the impermanent nature of all things. So all conditioned phenomena arise and cease. They're subject to birth and death. They are impermanent. Of course, what we tend to do as human beings is the mind endeavors to grasp that which is impermanent and have it stay. And this, of course, is a source of great suffering and distress. We want the things we love to stay. And all the time they are shifting and changing. So let's do the instruction as we've been doing over the days, directly. And we'll just see what actually happens as we do it. And could we have the Hebrew word for contemplate, please? Okay, thank you very much. So, as we sit, obviously we will have the direct experience of impermanence because all conditioned phenomena are impermanent. We will have that experience because it is the fact of life. But the sutta asks us to reflect on it, to contemplate. So let's do it and just see what happens. Breathing in. Contemplating impermanence. Breathing out, contemplating impermanence. So anyone, a direct experience of impermanence. Yes. 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 Aha. Okay. So the light and the cloud and the quality of the light is impermanent. Beautiful. So right there, you saw. And when you realized and recognized the impermanence of that, what was the feeling through the body? Calm. Yes. We can be with the shifting, changing nature of things rather calmly. It doesn't have to be difficult or a problem. And in this case, it isn't. It's just a shift and a change. But it's beautiful to see it because often we ignore the changes that are going on. Okay. Anyone else? Yes. Oh. Yes. Yes. Impermanence allows us to know freedom because we won't be stuck. Otherwise, we would be stuck. Yes. 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 Of course, don't we do this? When someone asks us to do something, the opposite comes. This is the nature of the mind often. We kind of push back. Go on, say more. Yes. Yes. The mind, by its nature, and there's been psychological studies done on this, goes to the unpleasant. We automatically grasp and hold and notice the unpleasant rather than the pleasant. It is the nature of mind to cling and to grasp. And so we have to see that. We have to see the yes, but kind of activity of the mind. We see one thing and we go, oh, but what about this? So you said that illness is unchanging. The fact that there is illness and that we as human beings, because we have a body, will face birth, aging, pain, and death. That is a fact. The illness itself, of course, and the body itself is impermanent. Say a little more about this kind of resistance you feel, of the mind gripping the painful. Ah, it's a habit. It's a habit. We know suffering. This is the first noble truth. There is suffering. We know that as human beings. And it's the nature of mind to grasp. And we don't only grasp the things we like. We also grasp that which we find unpleasant and difficult and painful. And this movement of grasping is what leads to much of our anguish and despair and sorrow. Sometimes, if we keep asking why all the time, we don't actually notice what is. And so it's more constructive to look at the process and see into it and then see if we can change or alter or shift some of the habitual movements of mind that clearly lead to suffering. Anyone else, a direct experience of impermanence? Yes. Yes. Yes, she said during this meditation she had a short breath and then a long one. Yes, the impermanence of the fluctuation of the breath. Yes. 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 So knowing the shifting, changing nature of the quality of the breath was freeing. Because if the breath was short for a while and you wanted it to be a little longer, you knew a long one would come. Easy as that. Okay, shall we go on to the next instruction? The next instruction is about fading away. Now, it doesn't mean that our whole body is suddenly going to disappear. It could, but, the sensation of it could, but it's about the fading away of desire or the fading away of attachment. So when we start looking at our breath, we see that the breath becomes almost imperceptible sometimes. It becomes very light, as if the breath would almost fade away. And then at the end of each out-breath, the breath fades away. We see that the moment fades away. We see that our desires and our wants fade away. We can see our negativity and our anger and our fear fade away. We can see our questioning fade away. There are many things that we can see and notice this aspect of fading away, where we can see. So let's just try it and see what you each discover. Breathing in. Contemplating fading away. Breathing out. Contemplating fading away. Did anyone discover that sense of fading away, a direct experience? Yes. Yes. Please. Yes, you. Foggy. Okay. So awareness was fading away. I don't think that was the purpose of the Buddha's instruction. But, and then? Oh, okay. Yes. The base of the spine, yes. Yes. Ah, yes. So the fading away of the sleepiness led to the energetic power rising up the spine, yes? That's it. And with that came a sense of attention and wakefulness and alertness, yes. So you see, when we just go with the experience, at first it can seem that awareness is kind of fading. And then suddenly there was this wonderful, wakeful energy that's exquisite and beautiful. And then what fades away, of course, are our difficulties. What fades away is our sleepiness, our capacity to be dull, the fogginess of the mind fades away. And there's suddenly alertness. And sleepiness can vanish in an instant. We just heard the report. Excellent. Thank you. Anybody else? Did you have something to say before? No. Yes. She said she started the meditation and a fantasy came. Yes. Yes. Okay. What was Yes. 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 So, yes. So with the recollection of the instruction itself, the fantasy faded away. Yes. 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 Beautiful. That's really interesting to me. So she said, instead of trying to push away or suppress or stop any fantasy, this intention to notice something fading away could be a wonderful way to release oneself from being caught in the narrative, in the self-narrative, the story, the fantasy, the imagination. Beautiful. So you see right there, there's a method, a way of not suppressing the thoughts, not pushing them away, not resisting the thought, being with the thought, but with gentle attention and with the remembering of the instruction to observe the fading away, of course. Thoughts fade away, feelings fade away, sensations fade away. Beautiful. Anyone else experience? Yes. Yes, she said the two instructions of impermanence and fading away made her reflect on death rather quickly. Yes. Yes. Okay, so the contemplation of death became, was at first very peaceful, and then there was the a bit of scariness. What was the fear? What was the scariness? Yes. Oh, okay. So you have an idea about what death is, or we imagine perhaps how our death might be. And what fell away was the construct or the notion of the idea, and we can actually have a direct perception or a direct experience of death right now. Which is actually the very next instruction, in fact. So you're right on here. So we have the death of the moment. We have, of course, the death of this body. We have the death of the self as we know it. We can know the death of the self right now. We can directly experience it. But the very thought for most of us that this body will die, this mind will end, everything we know of as ourselves will cease, is rather confronting. And so hence the fear. Yet we all know that with birth comes death. The two are not separate. They can't be. Every single person we see anywhere is born, and there's nothing more certain than the fact that we will die. End. And it's a harsh truth in a way. Yet, in the tradition, there's a lot of reflection and meditation on death. The monks sit in the morgue with the dead people, reflecting and meditating on death. When I was first in India, of course, the bodies are burned by the side of the river in Varanasi in particular, and in other holy places in India. And I can remember staying up one night. I was quite young, but staying there and just watching the body burn until it was ash. And it's an extraordinary contemplation, because we can have the direct experience that this body is of the same nature. And yet that experience can be, as you said, calm and without fear, just a direct knowing. It's a direct knowing of the nature of things. Thank you. So that brings me to the next instruction, which is, of course, a reflection on cessation. The endings of things. We can look at it. We don't have to look at it as the death of oneself. We can look at it and see the ending of a breath, the ending of a moment, the ending of being caught in time, the ending of a thought, the ending of a sensation, the ending of a sound. There are many endings that go by unnoticed. Often we notice the arising of something, but we don't see the ending. We don't notice that our attachment has ended. And often we don't notice that our difficulty has ended. We're so caught up in the next thing and the next difficulty, we didn't see that the last one ended. So let's see what happens when we do the direct reflection. The instruction is breathing in, contemplating cessation or endings, breathing out, contemplating cessation. So what did you discover about cessation? Anybody? Yes. Yes. So you tried to feel something and wait? Oh, wait for it to end. Yes. Yes. Then you had the realization that things begin and end, begin and end, begin and end, over and over and over again. So there are countless endings that we can notice. So when you realized that, what then? Yes. Yes. And because there's start and end, start and end, start and end, we can approach life with incredible freshness or newness. Because, of course, our idea of ourself starts and ends, starts and ends. Our views aren't fixed, actually. We think they are. It seems like it sometimes. But actually, the view is also impermanent. Our desires begin and end, begin and end. Our difficult mind state begins and ends, begins and ends. And so when we start to see in this way, we see that that which we thought had continuity through time does not. We give the self, the I, the me, the my, a continuity through time that it actually doesn't have. So once we start to see in this way, we see that all conditioned phenomena, which means everything you can think of, feel, see, every object is impermanent, beginning and ending, in just the way you described. And there's a sense of relief that comes with that because it doesn't stay. We can't hang on to it. The wisdom that comes from impermanence and the recognition of the beginnings and endings is that it's completely idiotic to grasp and to hang on to things, to want them to stay. We are such curious creatures. We know it. We've heard that there's impermanence. We know that all things come to an end. Yet, somehow deeply within us, we keep on doing the same old thing where we grip with mind and want something to stay. It's a remarkable thing. Sometimes I think we're a little bit kind of thick, you know, we say in English, like we just don't see clearly. We don't understand that impermanence and the fading away of things and the fact that there is cessation means that we need to let go. The only way to live freely with life in this situation that we all face is to find a way to be with life without grasping, not grasping anywhere, not grasping to anything. This is the wisdom of the Dharma. This is the wisdom of the deep seeing of impermanence. Thank you. Thank you for a great example. Anyone else? Yes. 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 Ah. So it's a beautiful process that we're all going to die, folks. And okay. Yes, beautiful. So yes, we see the impermanent nature of all things. But we have another sense, don't we? We have a sense of that which is not caught up in the shifting and changing nature of things. We get a whisper of, oh, there is something, or it's not really a thing, but a deep knowing of that which is undying. And of course, in many different religions and cultures and beliefs, this is named rather differently. And in Buddhism, of course, the Buddha thought that the question, is there a soul or not, was a speculative question and not something that we could actually directly know. Yet, he didn't pay attention to that. His interest was the end of suffering. But what he did point to was what he called the deathless, which is that which is not caught up in coming and going. And the deathless he defined as liberation through non-clinging. So, when we don't cling to anything, when there's the cessation of all those movements of the mind, such as desire, when wanting mind ceases, when our negativity and our hatred, both inwardly and outwardly, ceases, when our confusion ceases, when we see clearly, we know the deathless. So he spoke about touching into, or really understanding deeply, that which is not of the nature to arise and cease. And this is really important. It's the heart of the teachings. The impermanent nature of things is a characteristic of existence. It is the way in which things exist. When we really look deeply, we get this sense, as you had, and others here, of course, understand and know that we can see and feel and know directly, if you like, the understanding of that which is not caught up anywhere. And when we really understand non-clinging, and it's non-clinging to anything, we touch and know that which is not bound to coming and going, that which is unaffected by birth and death. And sometimes this knowing or this understanding is expressed as love and compassion. So we can get that sense of unending love, immeasurable love. Thank you. Thank you. So when we really reflect on cessation, of course, one of the questions that arises is there anything that does not cease? And I think this is perhaps what you were pointing to earlier. Yes. So, the Dharma is to be understood experientially. We can know from our own direct experience of the meditation. We can touch and know that which is indescribable or inconceivable. And the words, of course, and the poets point to this. The words of the Buddha point to it. There are many descriptions. Let's go on to the last instruction. And this instruction follows rather nicely from the one we just did. And the instruction is about letting go or relinquishment. So essentially the invitation is to sit not clinging to anything. So it's breathing in, contemplating letting go or relinquishment, breathing out, contemplating letting go or relinquishment. Did anyone have a direct experience of letting go? Sometimes we say, let be. Yes. Yes. She said, sometimes we do things and we regret how we did them. Ah, just like that, we can let go of things and start over. And it's exciting. It's wonderful to let go of regret. Regret is painful. And if we can just release the I thought that goes to the past and let go of the regret. Of course, if we need to apologize to someone, we make amends, we go do it. But we tend to get stuck in regret and then give ourselves a hard time about how we've behaved or what we've done. There is release. Just as we heard, just like that, we can let go of regret and then, oh, I can start over. Wonderful. Good news. Yes, anybody else with relinquishment or letting go, a direct experience? Yes. Oh, she says she needs much more time. What's that? Okay. Yes. 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 So you saw there. Oh. Okay. The first thing to let go of is the idea that I can't let go, I need more time. Okay? The view, I need more time to let go, 3 minutes isn't enough, needs to be let go of. Then you actually saw that the idea of the granddaughter as a baby is let go of. The idea of the boy is also let go of. He's now becoming a teenager and a young man. So this is the letting go of the view, letting go of the way we look at something. So you did actually see. Yes, you did it. You did it. She waved her fist. Yes, this is the letting go. Wonderful. Anyone else? Direct experience of letting go. Yes. A game. Oh, fun. Okay. I felt a pain and I said, I'm letting you go, and it vanished. Okay. Listen up, everybody. This is a good thing. So, yes. So the tickling, I'm letting it go and it vanishes. And this is what can happen when there's a depth of focus and concentration. We can literally let go of things one after the other and the other. And the unpleasant sensations are unpleasant, but they always begin and end of their own. What we tend to do is we resist the sensation, and the resistance keeps it there. The pain continues because of our resistance to it and the notion, I wish this would go away. So there's the clue. Just let it go. Let go of the pain. Let go of the tickling. Let go of the unpleasant Vedana. Beautiful. Anyone else? Yes. There is no time. Yes. Yes. Okay, beautiful. So it was a direct experience of the timeless. There was a deep stillness where it seems as if time stands still. It does. We're not going to the past. We're not caught up in the present. And the mind's not going to the future. What we see here, the wisdom from that experience, is the knowing that consciousness is unaging. The Buddha went in search of that which was not bound to birth, aging, pain, and death. So one of the things he discovered was the unaging. Now, when we reflect on consciousness itself, we realize that it's unaging. It's unaging because when people are nearing death, one of the things they say, and people on this retreat have said it to me, I don't feel old inside. It's true. So there is a knowing, a natural knowing for each of us of the timeless nature of things. And yes, of course, the body ages. We can't stop that process, but we can be at peace with it when we know our timeless nature, when we really know for ourselves the unaging. Fantastic. Thank you. The great example. Someone else. Yes. She tried to let go of the attention to anything. Yes. 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 So she endeavored to have equanimity to all things and just be, and what happened? Okay. For a moment it was just being, you said. Yeah, so it's being with the whole of life as it is, not wanting it to be different, not demanding it be a particular way, not the life according to you, but simply as it is. This is when we know the suchness of all things that we heard about last night in Sanju's beautiful talk. When we just see the suchness of all things, that which has come to be as it is, and we can be with that with non-clinging mind, non-grasping. When we don't grasp, there's peace. When we don't demand something be different, there's peace, there's calmness, there's a sense of wonderful stillness and ease. Then we can meet life with extraordinary freedom. This is our task as meditators, to discover how to meet life utterly freely, utterly fearlessly, and really know what it is to be alive. So on that note, we've come to the end of our instructions for the retreat. I really hope that over the days there's been something that's really touched you and something that you'll take with you and practice with. You can always just do mindfulness of breathing. That's the basic instruction. But you can cultivate the joy, the contentment. You can deepen your understanding of how the mind works. You can look even more deeply, reflecting on the extraordinary teachings of the Buddha, the teachings of awakening, and see and know for yourself liberation of heart and mind. We see the changing phenomena, and we also directly know that which is not bound to it, that which is not caught anywhere. And sometimes this is a kind of whisper inwardly. We get a sense of it that needs to be explored in our practice. And as we deepen into the practice, as we begin to let go of everything, freedom is found. Freedom is everywhere. These are the teachings. Please enjoy, and thank you very much to each of you who spoke over the days, because we really do learn from one another. It's a great offering, really, of your generosity to share your experience. So I appreciate it very much, and I hope that from the instructions, some wisdom has come forth and some curiosity and interest to bring some direct inquiry to your meditation experience. Every experience is the opportunity to wake up. So thank you from me. Enjoy your practice for the rest of the day and in the future. I hope to see you again. We'll say our goodbyes later. So take care. It's now time for walking meditation as usual.